Chapter 12. Result of a trivial accident. Cytheria, after letting down Miss Aldclyffe's hair, adopted some plan with it to which the lady had not been accustomed. A rapid revulsion to irritation ensued. The maiden's mere touch seemed to discharge the pent-up regret of the lady, as if she had been a jar of electricity. "How strangely you treat my hair!" she exclaimed. A silence. "I have told you, what I never tell my maids as a rule, of course nothing that I say in this room is to be mentioned outside it." She spoke crossly, no less than emphatically. "It shall not be, madam," said Cytherea, agitated and vexed, "that the woman of her romantic wonderings should be so disagreeable to her. Why on earth did I tell you of my past?" She went on. Cytherea made no answer. The lady's vexation with herself, and the accident which had led to the disclosure, swelled little by little till it knew no bounds. But what was done could not be undone, and though Cytherea had shown a most winning responsiveness, quarrel Miss Aldclyffe must. She recurred to the subject of Cytherea's want of expertness, like a bitter reviewer, who, finding the sentiments of a poet unimpeachable, quarrels with his rhymes. "Never, never before did I serve myself such a trick as this in engaging a maid." She waited for an expostulation. None came. Miss Aldclyffe tried again. "The idea of my taking a girl without asking her more than 3 questions, or having a single reference, all because of her good ale, the shape of her face and body. It was a fool's trick. There, I am served right, quite right, by being deceived in such a way." "I didn't deceive you," said Cytherea. The speech was an unfortunate one, and was the very fuel to maintain its fires that the other's petulance desired. "You did," she said hotly. "I told you I couldn't promise to be acquainted with every detail of routine just at first. Will you contradict me in this way? You are telling untruths, I say." Cytherea's lip quivered. "I would answer the remark, if it were a lady's." "You girl of impudence, what do you say? Leave the room this instant, I tell you." "And I tell you, that a person who speaks to a lady as you do to me, is no lady herself." "To a lady? A lady's maid speaks in this way. The idea." "Don't Addie's maid me. Nobody is my mistress, I won't have it." "Good heavens." "I wouldn't have come, no I wouldn't, if I had known." "What?" "That you were such an ill-tempered, unjust woman." "Possessed beyond the muse's painting." Miss Aldclyffe exclaimed, "A woman, am I? I'll teach you, if I am a woman." And lifted her hand, as if she would have liked to strike her companion. This stung the maiden into absolute defiance. "I dare you to touch me." She cried. "Strike me if you dare, madam. I am not afraid of you. What do you mean by such an action as that?" Miss Aldclyffe was disconcerted at this unexpected show of spirit, and ashamed of her unladylike impulse now it was put into words. She sank back in the chair. "I was not going to strike you. Go to your room, I beg you to go to your room." She repeated in a husky whisper. Cytherea, red and panting, took up her candlestick and advanced to the table to get a light. As she stood close to them, the rays from the candles struck sharply on her face. She usually bore a much stronger likeness to her mother than to her father, but now, looking with a grave, reckless, and angered expression of countenance at the kindling wick as she held it slanting into the other flame, her father's features were distinct in her. It was the first time Miss Aldclyffe had seen her in a passionate mood, and wearing that expression which was invariably its concomitant. It was Miss Aldcliffe's turn to start now, and the remark she made was an instance of that sudden change of tone from high-flown invective to the pettiness of curiosity which so often makes women's quarrels ridiculous. Even Miss Aldcliffe's dignity had not sufficient power to postpone the absorbing desire she now felt to settle the strange suspicion that had entered her head. You spell your name the common way, G-R-E-Y, don't you? ' she said, with assumed indifference. ' said Cytherea, poised on the side of her foot, and still looking into the flame. Yes, surely? The name was spelt that way on your boxes. I looked and saw it myself. ' The enigma of Miss Aldcliffe's mistake was solved. Oh, was it? ' said Cytherea. Ah, I remember Mrs. Jackson, the lodging housekeeper at Budmouth, labeled them. We spell our name G-R-A-Y-E'. What was your father's trade? ' Cytherea thought it would be useless to attempt to conceal facts any longer. His was not a trade, she said. He was an architect. The idea of your being an architect's daughter. There's nothing to offend you in that, I hope. Why did you say the idea? Leave that alone. Did he ever visit in Gower Street, Bloomsbury, one Christmas, many years ago? But you would not know that. I have heard him say that Mr. Huntway, a curate somewhere in that part of London, and who died there, was an old college friend of his. What is your Christian name? Cytherea. No. And is it really? And you knew that face I showed you? Yes, I see you did. Miss Aldcliffe stopped and closed her lips impassively. She was a little agitated. Do you want me any longer? Said Cytherea, standing candle in hand and looking quietly in Miss Aldcliffe's face. Well, no. No longer, said the other lingeringly. With your permission, I will leave the house tomorrow morning, madam. Miss Aldcliffe had no notion of what she was saying. And I know you will be so good as not to intrude upon me during the short remainder of my stay? Saying this, Cytherea left the room before her companion had answered. Miss Aldcliffe, then, had recognized her at last, and had been curious about her name from the beginning. The other members of the household had retired to rest. As Cytherea went along the passage leading to her room, her skirts rustled against the partition. A door on her left opened, and Mrs. Morris looked out. I waited out of bed till you came up, she said, it being your first night, in case you should be at a loss for anything. How have you got on with Miss Aldcliffe? Pretty well, though not so well as I could have wished. Has she been scolding? A little. She's a very odd lady, 'tis all one way or the other with her. She's not bad at heart, but unbearable in close quarters. Those of us who don't have much to do with her personally stay on for years and years. Has Miss Aldcliffe's family always been rich? Said Cytherea. Oh no. The property, with the name, came from her mother's uncle. Her family is a branch of the old Aldcliffe family on the maternal side. Her mother married a Bradley, a mere nobody at that time, and was on that account cut by her relations. But very singularly, the other branch of the family died out one by one, three of them, and Miss Aldcliffe's great-uncle then left all his property, including this estate, to Captain Bradley and his wife Miss Aldcliffe's father and mother on condition that they took the old family name as well. There's all about it in the Andet gentry. 'Tis a thing very often done. Oh, I see. Thank you. Well, now I am going. Good night. apostrophe, vi. The events of 12 hours, 1. August VNINTH. 1 to 2 o'clock a.m. Cytheria entered her bedroom and flung herself on the bed, bewildered by a whirl of thought. Only one subject was clear in her mind, and it was that, in spite of family discoveries, that day was to be the first and last of her experience as a lady's maid. Starvation itself should not compel her to hold such a humiliating post for another instant. Ah, apostrophe, she thought, with a sigh, at the martyrdom of her last little fragment of self-conceit. Owen knows everything better than I, apostrophe, apostrophe. She jumped up and began making ready for her departure in the morning, the tears streaming down when she grieved and wondered what practical matter on earth she could turn her hand to next. All these preparations completed, she began to undress, her mind unconsciously drifting away to the contemplation of her late surprises. To look in the glass for an instant at the reflection of her own magnificent resources in face and bosom, and to mark their attractiveness unadorned, was perhaps but the natural action of a young woman who had so lately been chidden, whilst passing through the harassing experience of decorating an older beauty of Miss Alcliffe's temper. But she directly checked her weakness by sympathizing reflections on the hidden troubles which must have thronged the past years of the solitary lady, to keep her, though so rich and courted, in a mood so repellent and gloomy as that in which Cytherea found her. And then the young girl marveled again and again, as he had marveled before, at the strange confluence of circumstances which had brought herself into contact with the one woman in the world whose history was so romantically intertwined with her own. She almost began to wish she were not obliged to go away, and leave the lonely being to loneliness still. In bed and in the dark, Miss Alcliffe haunted her mind more persistently than ever. Instead of sleeping, she called up staring visions of the possible past of this queenly lady, her mother's rival. Up the long vista of bygone years she saw, behind all, the young girl's flirtation, little or much, with the cousin, that seemed to have been nipped in the bud, or to have terminated hastily in some way. Then the secret meetings between Miss Alcliffe and the other woman at the Little Inn at Hammersmith and other places. The commonplace name she adopted. Her swoon at some painful news, and the very slight knowledge the elder female had of her partner in mystery. Then, more than a year afterwards, the acquaintanceship of her own father with this his first love, the awakening of the passion, his acts of devotion, the unreasoning heat of his rapture, her tacit acceptance of it, and yet her uneasiness under the delight. Then his declaration amid the evergreens. The utter change produced in her manner thereby, seemingly the result of a rigid determination. And the total concealment of her reason by herself and her parents, whatever it was. Then the lady's course dropped into darkness, and nothing more was visible till she was discovered here at Knapwater, nearly 50 years old, still unmarried and still beautiful, but lonely, embittered, and haughty. Cytherea imagined that her father's image was still warmly cherished in Miss Alcliffe's heart, and was thankful that she herself had not been betrayed into announcing that she knew many particulars of this page of her father's history, and the chief one, the lady's unaccountable renunciation of him. It would have made her bearing towards the mistress of the mansion more awkward, and would have been no benefit to either. Thus conjuring up the past, and theorizing on the present, she lay restless, changing her posture from one side to the other and back again. Finally, when courting sleep with all her art, she heard a clock strike two. A minute later, and she fancied she could distinguish a soft rustle in the passage outside her room. To bury her head in the sheets was her first impulse. Then to uncover it, raise herself on her elbow, and stretch her eyes wide open in the darkness, her lips being parted with the intentness of her listening. Whatever the noise was, it had ceased for the time. It began again, and came close to her door, lightly touching the panels. Then there was another stillness. Cytherea made a movement which caused a faint rustling of the bedclothes. Before S.E. had time to think another thought, a light tap was given. Cytheria breathed. The person outside was evidently bent upon finding her awake, and the rustle S.E. had made it encouraged the hope. The maiden's physical condition shifted from one pole to its opposite. The cold sweat of terror forsook her, and modesty took the alarm. She became hot and red. Her door was not locked. A distinct woman's whisper came to her through the keyhole. Cytheria. Apostrophe apostrophe, only one being in the house knew her Christian name, and that was Miss Aldcliffe. Cytheria stepped out of bed, went to the door, and whispered back, "Yes? Apostrophe apostrophe, let me come in, darling." Apostrophe apostrophe, the young woman paused in a conflict between judgment and emotion. It was now mistress, and maid no longer, woman and woman only. Yes. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.